Well, we are in Proverbs chapter 18, and last week we got through verses 1 through 14 with a lot of great conversation and a lot of good things. And as I was sitting here this evening getting ready for verse 15, I kept asking Crystal, didn't we already do this verse? We haven't. So we'll get started with verse 15.
Where's Crystal? Just
kidding. All right. And as always, if you have a different version and it makes sense or it doesn't make sense, you want to talk about those words, let's talk about them and let's read them all together. So here we go, 15. The heart of the discerning acquires knowledge. The ears of the wise seek it out.
I like that.
As always, we typically ask, what does all that mean?
If your heart is not discerning, you're not going to acquire the knowledge that you're asking.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah. It requires some diligence on your part, due diligence, some behavior modification possibly. What does it mean to be diligent? I'm sorry, discerning. Discerning, I said diligent. What does it mean to be discerning? We've talked about that, but...
Knowing right from wrong.
Knowing right from wrong. Right, and if you're not willing to know right from wrong, you're not willing to acquire knowledge, and in the book of Proverbs, knowledge is related to the idea of truth, right? If you don't want to know what's right or wrong, you don't really care that what the truth is, right?
You can't handle the truth.
Just kidding. There you go. You can't handle it. But the ears of the wise seek it out. What does that mean?
If you're always in listening mode.
Yeah, if you're listening, you're going to be seeking what is true. You're going to be looking for what's true. So what categories would we assign this to?
Wise.
Wise, good.
I also put it in heart and in truth.
Good. Oh. In your heart and in truth.
Did you say influence?
You could definitely say influence.
Do you also think that maybe there's action on our part? You know, it says, you know, the ear of the wise seeks knowledge, you know, at least in my version. And the other one, the first part of the verse says acquires knowledge. Sometimes when you hear something, the truth isn't always evident. You know, you're like, what? You know, how you kind of cock your head sometimes. I think, you know, maybe this verse is even helping us to understand, you know, you really have to make sure you know you are that discerning, like Lesta talked about, you know, and you seek that knowledge. You may have to, you know, understand things more than just what is evident. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, you have to work at it.
Yeah, it's more work than just, yeah. You can't always take things face value, I think, sometimes. Sometimes you have to question it and make sure that it is truth.
Good.
Did you read 1 and 2 or just
1? Just verse 15. Oh. Not yet, though.
Wait, you said verse 15?
Yeah, verse 15.
I thought we were in 15.
Oh, I'm sorry. Chapter 18.
I've done that same thing.
Chapter 18, verse 15.
We're in the middle of slacker.
Now it makes sense, doesn't it?
I've done the same thing. So good. said, but I did the whole page.
What about instruction, counsel, and even obedience? I put those in those in this particular verse in those categories as well, and that we need to obey.
What about humility?
Yeah.
Because if you're humble enough, you will listen. Then. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes a lot of humility to listen, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so chapter 18, verse 16. And as always, if you get the turtle and you don't want to read, just pass it on. Otherwise, you can read.
You said 16?
16.
I want to make sure I'm right.
That's right. Yeah. 16.
A gift opens the way and ushers the giver into the presence of the great.
Okay. What do you think that means?
It means, yeah.
God has given us individually tools that we can each, you know, bring
honor to him in each different way. Mm-hmm. Did they have was it a cultural thing? Kind of like today, I'll equate it to today. You know, like today, if you're invited to somebody's house, you know, you bring something. You know, like back then, if you went before the king or queen or whoever, was it culturally appropriate to bring a gift of some sort, right?
Yes. So like Matthew 2, you're talking about where the wise men were bringing frankincense and gold and all this stuff to Joseph because it was baby Jesus, the Messiah. So I see where you're coming along from that.
Yeah.
It is still culturally appropriate, at least for a little while. You know, sometimes, depending on how well you know the people, if it's the first time you met them or whatever, sometimes you bring something. We don't always do that anymore, but we just, hey, you get me. I'm the gift, right?
like I get Scooby Snacks, right?
Yeah.
I take that.
But yeah, it's like this idea that you have something to give, and that gets you into the door, but that also gets you in the presence of something greater. That's the idea. And to your point, it is like that relationship with God that we can have, that he has given us all these gifts, but we can give them back in return.
What does Tom's version say?
Yep. What does Tom's version say?
Verse 16, Tom.
Okay. A gift opens the way for the giver and ushers him into the presence of the great. So not much different. Than
yep. What does yours say?
It's the King James, and we need an interpreter again. It says, a man's gift maketh room for him and bringeth him before great men.
Oh, okay.
I said mine doesn't say before great men. Mine says before. Mine says before the great.
Talking about like a talent? Or a present, like a gift present?
Mm-hmm.
Or what?
Yeah, it sounds like it's much similar to what the NIV and what all of these have said, is that that gift makes a way for him to get in, right? It's his entry level. It's his entry to through the door.
Admission fee.
It's his admission fee. Yeah. But the gift makes way for you.
I think there's some interpretation that the gift is humility and selflessness. That as long as you are always putting others first, that gets you in the respect and gets you in God's presence.
So what gets us in God's presence is our salvation.
I know. That's not exactly what I meant.
But I think where you're going is others see Christ in us when we are allowing them to be first and showing that example. Yeah, that would could be a good way to look at this verse.
I looked at one of my commentaries on my phone, and this one says, this proverb is a simple recognition of fact. Generosity and politeness opens many doors.
Oh.
Basically, it's just it opens a door and gives you an audience. That does not mean that we are required to have a gift to come before Christ, though.
Right.
Generosity and what?
It says, generosity and politeness open many doors. And they did, I read two different things here that said it's the gift or the present, depending on what version you're using, is not the same word as bribe. So some people could look at that as, you know, a bribe to get in the door. And it's not this, so that's not the same word.
So what categories would you assign this verse to?
I put humility, goodness, and gentleness.
Humility, goodness, and gentleness.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And there's one more. But
I put down honor.
Honor?
That's it.
Mm. There you go. That's good.
And then mercy. What?
Mercy?
Uh-huh.
What about the path? The path you walk. All right, verse 20, or verse 17.
The first one to present his case seems right until others begin to question him.
Oh.
We kind of talked about this one last week, I think.
Yes, we did.
Just alluded to it a little bit.
Was that with justice? I trust we talked about that.
Yep. One of the pastors that I listened to in the commentary and read and all that, in this particular statement, he said, you remember when, and I'll get all the people's names wrong, but in there was a battle. David had all of his warriors out in battle, and the person in charge on the battlefield sent a message back to David. And one runner, he began running, and the second person wanted to run and tell the king a story. He wanted to tell the story. So the gentleman in charge on the field said, yeah, go ahead, run. But he ran faster than the first guy. He gets there, and David's asking him questions, and he can't answer anything. And so finally the second guy comes and gives all the answers, right? But the first, just because the first guy got there, he didn't have any information to give. And sometimes when we hear a story, mind you, our kids were perfect, never had an issue. I was perfect when I was a child. Never did anything bad.
Really?
Right. And in my case, you know, sometimes mom and dad would ask me, hey, what's the story here? What's going on? And if, you know, I needed to make sure I gave the right story. Otherwise, my brother would always tell the truth. It didn't matter. He always told the truth. Which was fine, which was good, right? He did a good thing. But I better get my story right the first time. Because sometimes my story wasn't always the right one.
Is that the sign, like, when you go, I think of that, it's like when you go to court and, that Joey wants to find out who's actually telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's going on, you got like two lawyers going at him saying this guy's telling but this guy's not. And then the Joey has to decide which one's telling the right story.
Yeah.
I think that's when this verse is kind of like that, but...
Yeah. First one to present its case seems right.
Seems right.
Seems right in my eyes. This is the way it is. But then there's always, you know, three sides to every story, right? There's my side, your side, and somewhere in the middle, there's the truth. Right? So... So where would you put this one?
That's a tough one.
I put them under both truth and lying.
Truth and lying.
Good. You sure? I'm kidding.
I think this also goes back to verse 15, you know, verse 17, you know, hey, don't be so hasty to be judgmental until you know a lot of facts, going back to the knowledge that we were talking about in 15.
Discernment on both sides, right?
Yeah, correct.
Discernment of the speaker to know when to speak, and discernment of the listener what to believe.
Right. Yeah.
See why I never liked that word when I was a kid? Discernment. There's so much work to it. All right, verse 18.
Which calico should put in on truth?
Yes, verse 17 went to the words truth, lying. The next category was discernment.
That's what I missed. Okay. Making sure I got it.
All right, verse 18.
Casting lots causes contentions to cease and keeps the mighty apart.
So let's talk about what this casting lots are. What is that?
Taking bets.
Rolling the dice, right?
Well, not back in Bible times.
Right.
Casting lots was how they knew the truth from God.
Yeah, that's how they determined it. Whoever drew the short straw.
It's randomness.
Whatever it is, you know, it seems random, but God picks the winner. Or the one in, you know, primary case that we could talk about is Jonah asleep at the bottom of the ship. You know, sailors all cast lots. We don't really know what those were, whether it was playing a dice game or whatever it was. But whatever it was something significant that the short straw always fell to the idea that that's the culprit. God is in control of making that happen, right? But when you do that, it would cause a dispute to be settled, because whatever, if you agreed to the terms of the deal, if you got the short straw, then you took whatever it was, right? That's
Correct
how it was settled.
If I'm wrong, but casting lots in the Bible is even mentioned in the story of Jonah, right?
Correct.
When
correct.
They're on the ship, and they're like, whose God is angry? Well, we'll just cast lots to see, and then Jonah pulls a short stick.
Yep, and it's Jonah. And he admits to it, right?
Yeah.
Also, another way, so the priests would wear the Urim and Thummim around their neck or in their pockets, and they fumble them around and pull one out, yes or no, whatever it said. The Urim was one, and the Thummim was the other. That's how sometimes they made those divine decisions. You know, this decision is from God. Yes or no? Whatever it is. Whatever it came out to be. We see that a lot through the Old Testament. The priest, the high priest, would have those wrapped around his neck. You know, wear them around, chain around his neck.
Verse
What's another word that you guys have that keeps strong opponents apart? The last half of that verse.
Powerful.
Powerful. Why is it important to do that?
It's strange that it says, to me that says it separates powerful opponents. In my head, opponents means they're already separated. Mm-hmm. So why are we separating something that's already...
Because they'll fight. They'll fight to the death, though, won't they?
So another... So
What was your translation?
Mine said keep the mighty apart.
What was the first part of that, though? You used a word that starts with a C, I believe.
Casting lots causes contentions to cease.
There you go.
Disagreements or, tension.
Coming together, butting heads. They're actively involved together, opposing one another.
Arguments, right? Fighting.
I don't get what this is saying, because are we not supposed to cast lots?
So, keeping this in the time, what we would say is, you and I have a dispute, okay? You and I are so angry with one another that we're going to go face-to-face, head-to-head, and winner takes all. But Tom walks in and he says, listen, tell you what, short straw loses and you walk away. And you agree to it, and I agree to it. And I draw the short straw. I agree to the terms. That's done and settled. We'll say the term was, whoever draws the short straw, they're wrong. Period, end of story. Yeah. Grab a straw. And there's the... We cast the lot rather than beating up one another and causing more of a problem between you and I. I drew the short straw. I resign. I step back. I withdraw.
So instead of somebody dying, because again, fighting to the death, you
just say to make peace or to essentially is what it's saying.
Yeah, it's essentially describing a way to bring about peace, negotiation, working. Putting aside your, because in that.
If you give me an inch.
Exactly. So, it's a compromise, right?
Okay. In my head, casting lots is kind of always like viewed as an unbiblical thing, or like
gambling.
Yeah, just not a good thing to do. God doesn't want us. Well, cutting things up to chance.
Yeah, I mean the other.
That's why this was a little.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine, right? Because we don't do that, do we? We actually either talk it out or just walk away. Mm-hmm. Right.
But sometimes you kind of do that. If you have a choice to go this path or this path and you don't know which one to take, you kind of do put out like a fleece, which would kind of be the same thing, in order to know which way to go.
Yeah, when you're praying.
Right.
Talking with God.
And back in the day, because they knew the lot, when they casted lots, the answer came from God. If there were the two kings fighting or whatever, mighty people, that whatever whichever way the lot fell, that was the end of the story. Mm-hmm. There was no further discussion.
Right.
Because we didn't need to be.
Our commentary says what you said. If both sides agree on the method of settling the dispute, that's the key.
So kind of like at the foot of the cross, Jesus is hanging on the cross and they're casting lots over his clothes. Remember that?
Yeah.
We often recognize that as they were casting lots or throwing a game of dice, and whoever didn't hit snake eyes, they lost. Everybody else got to win, right? That's the idea that we have here. It's not always a dice game. Well, it's whatever the compromised, whatever the method is that you're going to use that compromise,
right,
or that negotiation. But it's always that, God determined the winner at that point.
Like lock, paper, scissors, shoot.
There's another one.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
So, rock, paper, scissors.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
I think there's always an element of we agree to disagree.
Yeah.
We're not going to come to, I'm not going to get you to come to my side, and I'm not going to get you to come to your side. So as a compromise, we're going to agree to do this and settle it.
Yeah.
The big word they use when is arbitration when mm-hmm. it comes yes. to legal matters. You know, it's kind of an arbitration kind of thing.
Third party arbitrator.
Yeah.
And those are important. Like, you know, I was in a union for a little while. And in the union, if you can't resolve the issue between whatever you were asked to do and whatever the company's asking you to do, then it always goes to the arbitrator, right? And the arbitrator, whatever the arbitrator's decision is, that's it. That's the final decision. It's an arbitration. At the end of the day, all done. This is the decision. Everybody stands by it. So where would we put this? In these categories?
Good question.
I think it takes a level of humility to not necessarily give in, but to agree to that casting of lots arbitration type of thing.
Yeah. Humility.
I think it takes a lot of self-control, too.
Self-control?
Because you don't want your prideful self to come out.
Commitment, structure,
counsel. Oh!
Yep.
Peace.
Good.
And also put it in influence as well.
Yep. Good. All right, verse 19.
A brother offended is harder to win than a strong city, and contentions are like the bars of a castle.
So what does this mean?
Peace, humility, your counsel, instruction, and commitment.
Excuse me, sorry.
And so,
we love, I said we... It's kind of, well, maybe it's also that. I was just saying that it's a, like that we love misery, but I feel like this isn't really talking about this. I feel like this is more talking how closed off we can become when angry. I think, you know, the we have some family and friends. Our old church, when I was in high school, our youth group, it split and we all went separate ways, and we have church friends that we still hang out with, but we have friends who've not gone to church for 6 or 7 years because they're just so offended, so angry. Three people did things to them, and they cannot move past that. They can't go meet new people because of that, because it's just such in their head. They've locked themselves and fortified in this. Themselves in this, it's just an immovable thing to them.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like they've locked themselves in their own jail.
Yeah, which is this, yes, that exactly describes what it says here. That's a perfect example.
I think this is when you can kind of, like, you're wronged. This is when you turn you being wronged into you beginning to sin because of it. Or you, becoming a victim. It's that victim mentality where you're not wanting to change. Or you're not allowing to be better, yourself to be better, or allow for anything to become admittance. You love misery. You may not realize you love misery, but you love misery.
So what does this say about So again, let's put it this way. King Solomon is writing these Proverbs to the future leadership. What do you think his primary takeaway in this particular statement wants for them?
Be very, very careful what you... What causes you to have a contentious relationship? I mean, if it really has to be worth it for you to get worked up, like he said, you know, is it truly worth it?
I think there's instruction on both sides here, though. If you are the person offending, as well as being the person offended, the person that is offended, I think, needs to have the faith to keep trusting. Because when someone hurts us, we want to put up our walls of protection because we don't want to get hurt again. And if we're the offender in the leadership role, we have to be extra, extra, extra careful to be cognizant of how others might perceive anything we do or say, whether it's intended to be offensive or not. It could be taken that way.
Walking around with an awareness,
yes,
attitude, an awareness behavior that says, I really want to say this because you're really just crazy, but I can't really say that because I don't want to hurt, right? But yes, I agree. This verse has instruction for both sides, right? And it also helps us understand the other person. When we come across someone who is so offended, this gives us great insight into how and why they behave the way they do. They've been hurt. They're done. All the walls are up. And so to get into that, we have to, if we did the hurt, then we need to make sure that we are humble and ask forgiveness. But I think on the flip side, this is a warning also to us. In the book of Ephesians, it talks about forgiveness, and it talks about the importance of granting forgiveness before forgiveness is asked. That's a difficult thing to do, right? Because we want to dwell on we being a victim and putting up our walls and protecting ourselves and not exposing ourselves to other people. And God says, look, you don't have to be around that person, but you do definitely need to forgive them. Because in your mind, regardless of the bad thing that has happened to you, God is bigger than that. Right, and he can manage it. You forgive them for the behavior towards you, and you can mentally move forward in your life. Now, that's one of the things that I heard a pastor 30 years ago. We were at a camp and conference center working there, and during the senior high week, senior high camping, as you might imagine, always brought out a lot of issues that you don't deal with in grades 4 through 6 and 7 and 8, right? Senior high, they realize the world is not a fun place. Some had been abused all kinds of ways, and it was very amazing that the pastor one evening had this lesson, and he talked about Ephesians, and he talked about this idea of you can still go through the process of going through the police and going through all the things, but you personally will never heal unless you offer to God forgiveness for them. And I think that is a great lesson coming out of this, in the realizing where some people are when they've got their walls up and where we are. Sometimes I have walls up, right? I mean, there are parts in my life that have big walls, and I need to realize that I also need to offer forgiveness. between me and God for that situation. I may never see those people ever again, but I need to ask forgiveness. Excuse me, I need to grant forgiveness to them in front of God and realize I don't need to hold on to that grudge or that hurt, right? Does that all that make sense?
I think a good way to summarize that, like, there was this one time in my life where I had this person that I had known for a really long time just hurt me, and I was kind of healing through that process. My dad had told me, he's like, don't forget what's happened to you, but at the same time, surely forgive them too, because he's like, you know, he was like, to put it in perspective, he's like, you know, Jesus had all these people, the Pharisees, all these people that, you know, called him names, done horrible things to him and stuff, but at the end of the day, he still gave his life for them. So he's like, if he can do that for you, then you can forgive anybody. And I was like, that's true. So, you know, don't forget what's happened, because the moment you forget and you have that same situation happen, you know, and you make the same mistakes or the same things happen, or you get wronged by the same people, that's your fault if you forgot. Don't forget that you can forgive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out, because that's very, very important. Mm-hmm. You know, don't forget. Don't put yourself in that position again, but forgive. Mm-hmm. Protects you mentally, psychologically.
The forgive or forget thing is kind of it's not a thing.
Correct.
Because you can't forget.
No.
You're always going to know.
Right.
But you do have to forgive. And it's just like in the Lord's Prayer where it says, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us.
Yes.
It's just like when you go to, like, for me personally, I go to the Serenity Prayer. God gave me the serenity to accept the things I can change, to accept the things I cannot, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, with that meaning said, to accept the things I cannot change, what is out of my control, I cannot change that. Only God can change that, and He always knows the wisdom to know the difference between His will and my will, which is my will. Is I want that pride to come out, and I want if you go back to Deuteronomy, in the middle of the book, it says eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, you know that old expression. But when Jesus says in Matthew, he's quoting that and saying that forgive that person, turn the other cheek and walk away, because if you don't forgive that person that hurt you or anything like that, it's going to bring animosity up and everything else, and it's going to build mental trauma for you, and you won't heal, and still be a painful memory to you unless you heal. So,
good.
So that's why I always brought up. That's why I always go through the Serenity Prayer when I get like that.
Yeah, good. So what categories would we assign verse 18 to? I'm sorry. Yep, I can't count to 90. 19. Verse 19, where would we assign that? We already did 18.
I have faith and commitment.
That's good. A good one. Faithfulness
and commitment. Kindness.
Kindness.
Having a heart.
Good. Heart, kindness, commitment, what about compassion?
Compassion.
And forgiveness should be on here.
Yeah, forgiveness would be a good one to add, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Write that right underneath truth, right? Forgiveness.
Kind of a blanket for me over the family and friends section of, you know, the people in our lives, whether it's, you know, neighbors, friends, brothers, sisters, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know.
All throughout the family?
Kind of relationships, you know, all the different relationships we have.
So men, husband, woman, wife.
Yeah.
What about patience too?
Yeah.
Because you gotta have patience. And then, why don't you offer forgiveness? Would that be like a holy God? Because he's accepting your forgiveness?
God does accept our forgiveness, yep.
So, would that be like holy God? Or would that be wise?
It could be more in the wise category.
Okay.
Trying not to be foolish.
Yeah.
So, the next two verses are together, verses 20 and 21.
Ooh, overwhelming.
From the fruit of their mouths, a person's stomach is filled. With the harvest of their lips, they are satisfied. The tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit.
Okay. What are we talking about here? Reached into the bowl of popcorn, pulled out a piece of caramel. Been chewing on sour apples for a little while.
Oh, caramel.
What's this one?
Your mouth is a mirror to the soul. Kind of an idea that, you know, it can bring life or it can bring death. I'm not sure what the second part of verse 21 is talking about. And this is, even those who love it will eat its fruit. Is that referring to whoever's listening to your talk? They're receiving either the death or the life.
Mm-hmm.
And either way, they're going to eat it up. So make sure you're saying good stuff.
There you go. Has anyone else noticed that practically in every single chapter, at least 10 of the verses are talking about the words that come out of our mouth? It's interesting to me that the book of Proverbs and King Solomon was very concerned about the words that were coming out of people's mouths.
Maybe it gets one for today's generation, too.
Yeah. So what categories would you assign these to?
Influence.
Definitely the influence.
Tongue.
Tongue?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Lips as well.
Lips.
Lips, tongue. I even put it under self-control.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Self-control.
In a way, I'd put it under greed.
Greed?
Greed.
If you're always wanting to say bad things, you're kind of getting greedy because you want to see the outcome.
What about pride?
Can be, yes. Pride?
Yes.
Greed? Mm-hmm. What about a gift from God? Meaning, when we're talking about a gift from God in that section, we're talking about our speech. That's kind of the way we've looked at that particular category all throughout Proverbs. And the words, our ability to communicate is truly a gift from God. And how we communicate and what we say obviously brings life and death, right? But life or death. Any other thoughts there?
Find
someone. I just like how it reflects that, you know, the words that come out of our mouth can have a serious influence on what comes out of other people's mouths.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's good as Christians and hanging out with other Christians to speak good about God and talk about God often, because you're just going to cause that many more people to talk about more. Exactly what we're doing here.
Yeah. Yeah, I was listening to a pastor today, and he said the purpose of the church. What is the purpose of the church? And you could list about a million things, but even in the book of Acts, the whole purpose of the church was to come together, encourage one another, worship together, and learn about God. And that's what we're here. And that's the whole purpose of the church, so that we all have a place to gather together and talk about what's going on at work and what's going on in my life and how I'm discouraged and I'm frustrated and this just isn't going well and I need a little bit of encouragement, right? All of those things are important in a church, because if we're not sharing with one another, then we're not building that relationship with one another. It's one of the reasons why we ask for prayer requests. It's one of the reasons why we have that sheet on Sunday morning. We talk about it. It isn't just to go through a formality. It's part of that building community and creating this environment where we do care for one another and we get to know one another and we can have common conversations with one another.
What about righteous? Because it says those who love it will eat its fruit.
Yeah, if you're speaking righteous words, yeah. Good. Where else would we assign this at? 21. I'm sorry.
20 and 21.
20 and 21.
I would say heart, because all the heart, the mouth speak it, so.
Yep, heart. Righteous.
Look at you go, Shannon.
Oh. All right, verse 22.
Sure. A man who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord.
What's that saying?
It sounds like Pastor Nate's sermon.
I was not good to be alone.
I find it interesting that my commentary Bible kind of puts it like this, like where it says a man who finds a good wife, basically saying like the benefits or the illustration of a good wife versus a bad wife is basically saying a good wife is wise and she fears the Lord and she's able to function as the appropriate complementary helper that is stated in Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, where it says like a man needs a wise husband or wise wife can function together in a way as like one flesh, as a relationship. So that's what kind of what it means, like when it talks about like a man finding a wife that's a good thing and obtaining favor from the Lord.
Because they're both on the same page, doing the same thing, doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Goes more towards the whole reason why we want to make sure that when we date, we're dating people that have like beliefs in God and they trust in Jesus. We don't want to be apart from that. It sounds mean, but the reality is it's very helpful.
It is. Because, I mean, you know, it is very, very hard to date somebody when they're not a believer and you are. It's a very hard thing.
It is.
You just clash all the time. Yeah,
it's hard. Especially if you want to beg them to go to church and they still say no. So.
Mm-hmm. So where would you put verse 22? In these categories.
Husband and wife.
It's all about relationships.
This is our God, I think like holy God and compassionate God, just kind of echoing what Nate was talking about on Sunday, you know. It wasn't good until there was man and wife. There's still purpose between, and both of those being needed.
Yeah. Good.
Love and patience.
And you were going to say?
Commitment.
Oh. Good.
It's from the Lord.
All right, verse 23.
The poor person pleads, but the rich one answers roughly.
Say that again.
Verse 23, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the poor person pleads, but the rich one answers roughly.
Okay. Does anyone else have additional words to that? What version is yours?
I think it's Common Standard Version.
Christian Standard Bible.
Christian Standard.
ESV. Mine says, the poor plead for mercy, the rich answer with insults.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There we go.
What's Tom says?
What's Tom saying?
When a poor man asks for something, he must say that everyone listens when a rich man speaks, even if he is rude.
Okay.
Well, I like that version better.
Yeah, mine was a little too simple.
This is a little vague.
Yeah,
So what are we talking about here?
It's entreaties, meaning.
Do what?
The poor uses entreaties, but the...
Entreaties?
Entreaties, yeah.
Meaning they're begging.
Oh.
It's another word for begging.
Okay, that makes sense.
Disrespect.
Yeah. Disrespect?
I think it's a statement on culture that people give respect whether you're poor or rich, but you shouldn't be doing that.
Okay. Isn't it amazing? That's been going on since the first century or before.
Yeah.
What are we, the 20-something
century? 25th century right now. 2025. We're going to be in the 30s.
21st century? Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, and how many centuries were before zero?
Mm-hmm.
I was born in 19th century. 1994.
That's the 20th century.
Oh, my bad.
He's in time travel. 1800s. So where would you assign... We're going to go ahead and finish verse 24, but where would we assign 23 in this idea of... who we pay attention to.
This isn't really a how you should act proverb. It's a just statement of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Illusion.
There you go.
Illusion.
I can see that. Because if you're driving by, you see someone begging for money and stuff. So that could be the poor. So...
I put it down in the category of mercy.
His mercy is more.
The idea that you know, sometimes we need to be merciful and not just listen to the people that look good.
I think as a whole, most people are a lot nicer to the to politicians than we are homeless people.
Uh-huh.
I kind of put it in the road. I think that's what I think of when I think this is. When even yesterday we were downtown, there was a homeless guy outside IUPUI, and I was like, "Can I get your car?" And then I was like, "Look, I'm being a little bit of a, I mean, you can be safe, but at the same time, I'm like,
am I being judgmental?
I'm being very judgmental right now. I'm acting like this guy is going to rip me in half. In all reality, I think you know maybe that's not you know." Not how we should view those people.
I will admit, I worked at a homeless shelter for a really long time, like a family homeless shelter. And in a way, very quickly, you can get your heart very hardened towards those people, especially seeing a lot of the decisions they make where you know, like, it's like, why would you do that? Like, you know, especially when they have children involved, you know, and... State comes, take their kids, you know, they keep making the same decisions. Feels very easy to get your heart hardened. Like, you know, when they're doing drugs and, you know, they're doing lots of alcohol, they're not making the right decisions, you know, they're abusing their kids and stuff. And it's like, you know, it feels very easy to have your heart hardened towards them. But, you know, like, sometimes it's hard to witness people like that because you just feel angry. Like, you know, especially when, like there's kids involved, and you know, and they abuse their kids, or they're not making the right choices, or neglecting them, which, you know, it can be hard to feel like to witness to them at times. But you know, obviously that should change. You know, where we should feel more of a need to witness to them because of it.
It kind of goes back to that previous verse about giving forgiveness before it's asked for. We can forgive them for those sins. And that might help us have more empathy.
It requires seeing them through God's eyes.
Yeah.
Which is, again, difficult. But it's what we're asked to do. Right? It's what we're asked to do. So where would you put verse 23? We did the illusion,
yeah.
Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
The poor and needy. All right, last one, verse 24.
A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother.
Okay.
There we go. I finally found it.
Any other versions?
There are friends who destroy each other, but a real friend sticks closer than a brother.
Okay.
Companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother.
Okay. So in all of these versions, what are we talking about?
Friends.
If you want friends, you have to be friendly.
Yeah.
You gotta put the other person first.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just be a friend. Don't just call them if they call you. Call them anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just your actions be relying on theirs. Just be a friend. Everyone.
It's just like if you know someone's struggling, and then you don't do anything to reach out. You know. That's gonna look bad on you. Because you didn't reach out and someone else did. And as Christians and stuff, the difference between non-Christian and Christians, I look back at it, it's like, you meant it when you say it, by your actions. Say, like, if you need anything, I'm always here. And you always, like, check up on them afterwards, see how their day was. And so non-Christians were not through that. They care about themselves and everything else. So
in the NIV it says a man of many companions may come to ruin, meaning the influences that are in his life, right? And we can have a whole lot of friends, and there's nothing wrong with that. We just have to be very careful. We need to guard our heart. We need to make sure we're paying attention to what matters. The second half of this verse is, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Anybody know who that is?
Jesus.
Who would it have been when King Solomon was writing this? God. Jesus. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Remember, God came and visited him and asked him what he wanted, right? He goes, hey, I just want to be wise. I want to rule these people with wisdom. And I think throughout his life, we know that King Solomon was not a perfect individual. And he made some mistakes. But throughout his life, he proved that God does stick closer than a brother, doesn't he?
Like, it is a little ambiguous. You know, you get through 23 verses, and then here at the end, it's like, there is a friend. It doesn't say the Lord. It's kind of assuming, like, you haven't figured it out by now.
Yeah.
You know, you're probably lost. But I like how it's a little ambiguous.
So where would you assign verse 24 in all of these categories? Counsel. Good. The big obvious one would be?
Friends.
Very good.
You got a friend in me.
I put it in gift from God and also wise God.
Good.
I think that God is very wise to give us a person like Jesus, and as well as that is a gift given to us to have that relationship as well.
I think along with that goes grace. Mm-hmm. Right?
Grace.
Throwing that in the category of grace. Holy God, firm foundation. Good. What about salvation? Did you? Good. Salvation. So as we look at chapter 18, and you got this sheet in front of you, and what you filled out tonight, or even what you filled out last week and this week, what kind of stands out to you is, what's the theme here? I know we're a little bit over. We'll be all right.
Speech and God's kindness.
Do what?
Speech and God's kindness.
Yep. Speech and God's kindness.
I think closely following behind those two, I've got a lot in the popular sins. I know we've talked about, you know, our speech. God gives us guidance on it, but it can lead to a lot of the popular sins that can trip us up.
Yep. Pride, jealousy, illusion, disrespect. Well, let's pray. Thank God for our time tonight, and let you guys go away this week. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, we do love you, and thank you again for the moment that we have had to sit and read your word together, talk about it, discuss it, and just dig into how you would like for us to live. Pray, Lord, that one of these proverbs would stick out to us all week long, that we would be able to work on it, that we would watch over our behavior, Lord, that we would act the way you want us to act. It's difficult, and we know that, but with you all things are possible, and we pray, Lord, that you would change our life to make us more like you and cause us to desire and long to have that close relationship with you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Mm-hmm.